Welcome to the Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. It is July 23rd, 2010, and I am in the studio with Allison Cole.
Hello.
Hey, and she's actually doing the controls today as well, multitasking.
Yep.
And our guest host, Carissa Thorpe.
I can't see. Hello.
Thanks for coming back, Carissa.
Yeah, and John Pranger is in the studio supervising all the technical activities. Today on the show, we're going to have Sandra Moore. She is the founder of freeanimalvideo.org, which is a new organization that just started up 2 weeks ago. And we're also going to have on the show Robert Light, who is an activist who we met at the aquarium meeting on Monday, and we're going to be speaking to him about what happened at the meeting on Monday.
Do I see him right now?
You do see him right now.
That's
he came
surprise.
In.
Hi, Robert.
So, Allison, on to you. I think you have something to share with us.
Yeah, I've been reading the book, Animals as Persons, Essays on the Abolition of Animal Exploitation by Gary Francione, and wanted to discuss one of the topics that is presented in this book, as written in his essay titled Taking Sentience Seriously. For those who don't know, Gary Francione is a well-known animal rights scholar who is a founder of the abolitionist theory of animal rights, declaring that legal ownership of non-human animals is unjust and that it must be abolished before animal suffering can be substantially reduced. He takes a strong approach on the property status of animals, the differences between animal rights and animal welfare, and a theory of animal rights based on sentience alone rather than on any particular characteristics. So back to animal sentience. Sentience is the ability to feel or perceive, and this is something that has been debated long and hard among theorists and scholars for centuries as per whether some animals or any animals have the ability to do this, and if they do, should they be afforded rights? In his essay, Francione talks about what he calls the similar minds theory of the human-non-human relationship and states that as a method to determine whether or not animals should have moral significance, this theory is faulty and will only lead to further exploitation of animals. I will explain. Until the 19th century, animals were for the most part regarded as things and not as moral persons because we believe that they lacked some supposedly uniquely human characteristic that made us different from them and deprived them of any moral significance. From the pre-Socratics through Plato and Aristotle and beyond, theorists maintained that animals, unlike humans, were not rational, self-aware, or capable of abstract thought, language use, or reciprocal moral concern for humans. So as a result of the supposed differences, humans could not have any moral obligations that they owed directly to non-humans, and the animals could not be members of the moral community. And this is perhaps where the beginnings of animal exploitation has derived from. The similar minds theory comes into place when non-humans have decided to measure whether or not animals deserve a place in the moral community, in our moral community, based on how alike their way of thinking is to ours. But the true question is, does this even really matter? First of all, as Francione notes, the similar minds theory itself is something that is quite odd. For those people who live with a dog or cat, for example, would you not recognize that these animals are intelligent creatures who think and feel the same as humans do? Aren't they emotional and self-aware? And so they should have this sentience, even though they are a different species than we are. This should be obvious. One problem with the similar minds theory is that it really shouldn't matter. Why should any characteristic other than sentience, Francione argues, be necessary in order to have full membership in the moral community and thus be awarded the same moral respect as human animals? Why? Another problem with the similar minds theory is that it does not specify the extent to which an animal's mind must be similar to ours in order for us to consider it to be enough like ours to deserve moral significance. This, every time an animal displays a similar way of thinking to a human, the bar is suddenly raised, and then we are making new expectations for them to be even more similar to us in order to win that moral equality to us, and therefore it will never happen. An example can be made with how parrots, like chimps and dolphins, can master complex intellectual concepts that most human children are not capable of mastering until the age of 5. Parrots are capable of doing single-digit mathematics, which I've actually seen with my own eyes. But yet, we are still exploiting parrots by selling them in pet stores. So how intelligent does the parrot have to be before we conclude that the parrot qualifies for membership in the moral community? Does the parrot have to be able to do double-digit math? And then what? It'll just never end. Even when the similar minds theory has been proven with animals, this likeness is ignored, and we humans still exploit these animals that demonstrate to have such similarities as to humans. An example is the similarities between humans and chimpanzees. Chimpanzee DNA is 98.5% the same as ours, and chimpanzees have a cultural and mental life very similar to our own, which has been known for years now. Nevertheless, humans still continue to keep chimpanzees in zoos and to experiment on them for medical testing. The conclusion to Francione's argument basically states this: whether or not animals have minds that are similar to ours is irrelevant, and that only sentience is relevant to determine if animals should be afforded moral significance and thus equal consideration as humans. So what do you all think?
Well, I think that all this philosophizing morals doesn't impress me at all. It's just another way to intellectualize discrimination. Like, who cares if my cat doesn't count? He scales a fence that's 7 feet tall, and like, you know, I can't do that.
Right, so exactly what he's saying is, why should what we measure our intelligence or significance on be a factor for animals? They can do way more things than we can do. And as he mentions, birds can fly. No human can do that on their own. Fish can breathe underwater. No human can do that on their own. And a dog can jump 6 feet in the air from a sitting position. What human can do that? Who are we to say that we are better than animals and therefore deserve, as he says, moral significance?
Yeah.
Because we can do certain or think certain ways that we don't even understand if animals can or... It's not even that they can or can't. We just don't even know.
If it's that important, you know, how smart we are, how much we can count and whatever, add and subtract, then, you know, we can do whatever we want with newborn babies. We can throw them around. We can experiment on them. We can eat them. We can barbecue them because, you know what? They can't do math.
Exactly. And not only newborn babies, but there's some adult people that can't do 5-year-old math as well.
Exactly.
There are people who can't read either. So
that's that.
Exactly.
It's a big subject to think about, and we'll leave it at that for now. Carissa has the news right now.
Victoria SPCA Animal Protection Officer Erica Paul responded Tuesday to the scene where a Victoria area man was seen beating a baby raccoon and its mother to death with a hockey stick on Monday night. She retrieved the bodies of the two raccoons, which are to play a critical role in confirming the events leading to their cruel deaths. According to Paul, under the Wildlife Act, because raccoons are considered to be pests, people do have the legal right to terminate a raccoon that is damaging their property. But she points out that this must be done humanely. The BCSPCA's Chief Animal Protection Officer, Sean Eccles, went on to clarify that humanely would mean the death would have to be instant and would have to be pain-free, and this wasn't. This was to be considered a brutal death. It is hard to see how one could view this as anything but a brutal, cruel, and unnecessary display of violence against animals. While their investigation is still in progress, the BCSPCA is expected to recommend charges against the assailant. Sadly, this is just one of the nearly 6,000 cruelty cases the SPCA handles on a yearly basis. Monday evening in Victoria gave cruise ship tourists an experience they hadn't bargained for, as a pair of horses pulling a carriage were spooked, reportedly due to the wheels of the trolley they were pulling making contact with the curb and sending the horses bolting. The result was uncontrolled galloping, and one of the horses became tangled in the harness and fell, scraping its legs on the roadway. News reports stated that it took over an hour for the injured horse to be able to stand and walk on its own back to the stables. Victoria Carriage Tours' website states that their mission is to provide an unforgettable horse-drawn carriage experience for our customers. Hopefully, this event will be just that for the onlookers and make them think twice about the outdated service that the horses are mandated to. The company's website goes on to proffer that horse-drawn carriages recreate a time when life was to be savored slowly, recreating a very special relationship between man and nature. When treated with care and respect, the horse willingly provides his great strength for man's purposes. Man, in turn, tends to the health and comfort of his partner in work. Therein lies the dignity of labor. Many animal lovers would disagree, especially about the experience bringing man and nature closer together, as harnessed, blinkered, and walking busy streets is by no means a natural environment for horses. And I don't think it's a stretch to say that the horses aren't volunteering their services to pull carriages and trolleys so people can have a return to a slower way of life. As society has evolved, so too should our animal welfare expectations. Not surprisingly, accidents, unhealthy and unhappy-looking horses on Victoria streets occur frequently, though they're not often reported to police or ICBC. The Victoria Vegan, which is a newsletter published by Friends of Animals, has been advocating for a ban of horse-drawn carriages on Victoria streets. For further information on their campaign and the issues surrounding the industry, as well as how to help the cause, visit www.thevictoriavegan.com.
Great. Thank you, Carissa, for that. And definitely they should stop that because, you know, we have cars and bicycles. And
and they're interacting with the horses, which makes it difficult for them. And that's why
I saw the picture in the newspaper in the province or whatever it was. And it was really sad. Poor animal just lying there.
I know. And then we know where they go afterwards to the horse slaughterhouse.
Yeah. Dog food.
Dog food. Yeah. So, I think we have on the line our next guest. FreeAnimalVideo.org is a unique animal rights organization providing free, high quality videos to activists and media. Here to tell us more about this wonderful organization is founder Sandra Moore. Welcome to Animal Voices, Sandra.
Hey, hi. Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Sandra.
I'm so excited to be on with you.
Great. Please tell us what FreeAnimalVideo.org is all about.
Well, the story you just covered about the horse-drawn carriages is a perfect way to show how FreeAnimalVideo.org works. Unfortunately, it sounds like there was a horse that went down or was suffering because of the practice of horse-drawn carriages and putting them out there in the sun, working all day on the hot street. If somebody had a good quality video of that and this story was to break, they could upload it immediately to FreeAnimalVideo.org, and I could make it available, or the site could make it available, to all the news outlets via the Internet in its high-quality form so that they could click one button without signing any membership or anything and get a completely free, royalty-free, licensed, completely cleared clip to put in their newscast. So FreeAnimalVideo.org provides absolutely free stock footage that helps get the word out about animal issues so that we can become, more present in the nightly news, where news stations will know that they can go someplace and with no strings attached get the video they need to tell the story of the day.
Why did you start FreeAnimalVideo.org?
Well, I started it for three reasons. I've been doing animal promotional videos for about 12 years. I've done about 200 videos. I've probably seen about 2,000 hours of animal suffering. I edited a documentary called Behind the Mask that covered many, many things, including laboratory testing and slaughter and stockyards. And one of the things that's been really hard is to do these projects and then put the video up on the shelf. Whatever animal we showed in that promo video probably raised money that day that we showed that image, and then it went on the shelf. Well, FreeAnimalVideo.org gives these videos new life. It gives an opportunity for others to use that same video to tell the story in their organization or in their community. So the first reason I started is I wanted to get all the footage off the shelf and have it reused by students, media, documentarians, the press. Second, I wanted a place where the press could go and get videos of animals and animal issues very quickly with no strings attached. When CNN asks me for video, I usually also have to sign paperwork saying that I have rights to it. And it's kind of complicated. Well, if you have a public domain site where it is said right on the site that all this video is free use, these press agencies are going to start using it because it's fast and efficient. And then the final reason I started it is because I wanted the animal organizations to become players in this media game, a place they could go for free where they could put up their video and have it globally distributed within minutes.
That's very interesting. Can you tell us what is the difference between the videos provided by your organization and, say, the animal rights videos that are already on YouTube?
Okay, sure. First of all, I should probably make a distinction. FreeAnimalVideo.org is every animal organization's site. This is a community site where everybody participates. It really doesn't fall under just the umbrella of FreeAnimalVideo.org. It really is a place for all of us to come and become a force. And I want to make sure everybody takes ownership of it because that's what it's for. It's not meant to belong to any one place. And so the difference between the video that's on FreeAnimalVideo.org and on YouTube is this. On FreeAnimalVideo.org, you can easily watch a video that's relatively low quality, and it actually is a YouTube video. But if you were to click the link underneath it that says download high quality video, you would be connected to a Google site that lets you, without membership and without logging in, to, in 30 seconds, have another version of that clip, of that video clip, that is in high definition and suitable for broadcast.
Great. That's excellent. So, you know, it's high quality, so people can, if they were to show films in a theater, for instance, they could download from freeanimalvideo.org and just show it on a big screen?
You could make an entire feature film worthy of being on a big screen with just the video that you find on freeanimalvideo.org.
That's fabulous. Can you give us an example of the videos found on your website?
Yes. Let's see. Let me go into recent videos here. At the top of freeanimalvideo.org, it says most recent videos. And I'll just scroll down. It shows 50 videos per page. And I'll just scroll down and tell you what we have. Close-up of an orangutan's face in the zoo, which is so sweet because he almost looks human. Mm. A close-up of a Bolivian lion's mouth and eyes, which you can see almost every whisker because it's in high definition. A brown horse walking up to the camera and sniffing the camera, so you get a real good look right inside that nose. Elephants walking free at Paws Sanctuary. A white cow in a pen with a tag in his ear at a stockyard. Battery cages where feathers are nearly rubbed off of these poor little chickens in battery cages, which are used to produce eggs. Flamingos walking at the zoo, a turtle eating close-up, a Bengal tiger rescued at Paws Sanctuary, a monkey swinging on a cage in a zoo, doesn't look too happy, a giraffe, black bear, elephant enclosure, you know, the new Billy's enclosure they have in Los Angeles mm-hmm. that they're building here.
Everything.
Yeah, everything. I say everything goes. You know, any animal issue, including anybody out there that has any good video of those horse drawn carriages, get it over to me quick at freeanimalvideo.org. Mm. You can actually upload it right to the site, right on the site.
What if it's not like an animal video, but if someone shot a video of an animal rights protest that they attended that day, will they be able to post it on your website?
Yeah, we do have a few protest videos. Now, one thing we want to do, and I've been working with media a lot, is try to make the website come across as sort of neutral. Mm. So we want to, you know, kind of rise above a little bit the very important work of protesting. Not rise above, but we want to sort of make the site a little bit less radical so that places like CNN and Fox News even will feel comfortable downloading video there. By osmosis, they're going to get the idea. If you see a video about the zoo, it just doesn't say monkey in a cage. It says, you know, animals that are kept in cages and enclosures for their entire life suffer physically and psychologically where they're bored, cramped, lonely, and far from their natural homes. There's a message on this site, but we're trying to keep the protest footage down to a little bit of a minimum, unless it's big news, in which case we'll make them a special page.
Right. Okay. Now, do you accept edited videos or just raw footage?
Yeah, there's a section on our site called promotional videos.
Okay.
These videos, people are invited to put on their Facebook and that kind of thing, and they are edited with music. These are videos not used for stock footage. These are videos that are already edited, meaning that the music and so on is probably somebody else's. So these are just meant to sort of play or post in your favorite areas, but they are not meant to be edited with. Stock footage on the rest of the site is used for editing.
Okay. Now, you talked a lot about media, but who do you think, other than media, are going to make use of your services?
Well, I am so excited about, for instance, last night going to a fundraiser and hearing all these filmmakers just light up when they found out that in their movie, their documentary that they were making about elephants, they could now get high-quality video footage of elephants living happy lives. These are the kind of things that are not only hard to find, but they're expensive. So the other people that will benefit from this are students making films, documentarians making films, animal organizations that are making commercials or PSAs, those kind of people.
Would there be copyright issues?
None.
Okay.
Absolutely zero copyright issues. Everything has releases. Everything that's posted is okay for use in perpetuity throughout the world.
Great. And I guess, you know, if you're making a PSA, you only have like maybe 30 seconds. Do they need to include like credits for each shot that they use?
These are such great questions. And the answer to that question is happily no.
Great.
Places like CNN don't have time to put graphics on every single shot, and PSAs aren't effective when they have graphics of other organizations on every shot. So the organizations that give their video to freeanimalvideo.org in their release say that while we mention their organization under the clip, you don't have to mention their organization when you use the clip.
Great. And I understand you just launched this organization merely a few weeks ago. Have people already been downloading and uploading the videos?
Yeah. We launched July 1st, and we're growing in video every day. You know, obviously it takes a lot of time to create the video and have it go up and link it and make it searchable and tags and titles and blah, blah, blah. So we have had about, I think, between 150 and 200 views each day according to our stats, and I am able to see which videos they are looking at and downloading, and it is all different types. They are not leaning towards one video. It's either sometimes it's elephant, sometimes it's rodeo, sometimes it's feeding an animal through a fence, a humane officer feeding an animal hay through a fence. So, yeah.
I think that's fantastic. It's you're getting so many hits so already, and it just started.
Yeah.
Well, we have a PR that we're going to launch here for freeanimalvideo.org very soon. And when we launch that public press release to national media, we expect it to catch on. And another thing, once people find out it works, they're going to keep it bookmarked. This is going to be a place that media places come back to again and
again. I think the mainstream media will really enjoy your website for sure. I think they're always looking for this kind of footage.
And if we could keep, keep covering the most recent news, when something new happens, maybe we'll become the TMZ of animal animal sites.
That would be wonderful. And you mentioned about, you know, news releases. If an organization releases an undercover investigation video, will you immediately have the high-quality video readily accessible on your website?
That's really up to the organization. If they contact me and get me the tape, get our organization the tape, or if they submit it as a QuickTime movie, if they have the capability of doing that, right into the site, freeanimalvideo.org, they will immediately go up, and we will make that happen.
That's wonderful. So I guess getting the word out to the different organizations is really important because they're the ones mostly doing all this work.
And they're doing amazing work, and they're not getting enough attention for it.
Mm-hmm. Now, besides running this organization, you're a professional director in Hollywood, as you've said before. Can you tell us a little bit of some of the animal rights projects that you've worked on?
Okay, well, I am. Thank you for saying successful or whatever. I don't know about that. But I did make a movie about the stock market last year because I honestly needed to take a break from some animal stuff. It was I was suffering a little post-traumatic stress disorder from seeing so much animal cruelty. And I did a movie about the stock market, which got distribution, and it sold in all the major markets. And I just Twittered our 40,000 Twitter followers about your radio show.
Ray, thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you. And let's see, in terms of animal work that I've done directing outside of mainstream, I have worked with everybody from Farm Sanctuary, who had me archive 15 years of their footage into searchable videotapes so that they could, when somebody calls them, easily and quickly grab the right shot that they needed. And everybody from Farm Sanctuary to Animal Acres to Best Friends to the Humane Society, who's hired me this week to do something or is sending me something this week, to, In Defense of Animals. Usually my forte and the reason people call me is to create a video that is in 3 minutes going to get somebody to either get involved or write a check. So I do trailer-type videos, promotional-type videos for the animal organization.
Great. And if people want to contact you for your professional services, where would they contact you?
Well, if they go to the site, freeanimalvideo.org, they'll find me there. And also just by emailing the site, the email will get to me eventually.
Excellent. We only have a minute left. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I just really want to say that it's so exciting that people like you are taking time to cover something like this. You know, Animal Voices showing up every Friday and doing this kind of work. I'm sure you hear it all the time, but it's not easy. People have no idea how much work goes into what you do each weekend. You guys have been just fabulous to work with, and I wish you massive, massive success out there in national radio.
Thank you so much for that credit. It does take a lot of work to do this show. And I thank you for taking the initiative to go out and do this website, because if you didn't do it, no one else would. And it's needed out there. There's a demand for it, I think.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
So thank you for coming on the show. We're all out of time now. Take care.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye. That was Sandra Moore, professional editor, director, and the founder of freeanimalvideo.org. For more information, please visit freeanimalvideo.org.
So Carissa's got our events.
Okay. So Saturday, July 24th, that's tomorrow, is Animal Freedom Day all over the world. Animal Freedom Day is a global event that aims to raise awareness about the need for animal rights in every society and to create positive solutions for the protection of animals. It is a day in which people from all walks of life cease to consume animal or animal byproducts and to gain support for the goal of putting an end to the slaughtering of animals, animal abuse, and the creation of alternative food sources. I urge you to find out more by checking out the website for this global event at www.animalfreedom.com. Sorry, animalfreedomday.com, where tomorrow they will also be doing a live streaming of the event on the website. This event is organized by Hamilton, Ontario's 18-year-old activist Nadia Masoudi, who we had on the show last week to speak about the event. Wednesday, July 28th, from 5 to 8 p.m., there is a vegan bake sale fundraiser to save the Uvic rabbits at 3G Vegetarian Restaurant, located at 3424 Cambie Street in Vancouver. Emergency funds are desperately needed to spay and neuter 1,600 rabbits from the University of Victoria campus. The rabbits will be relocated to safe sanctuaries to live out the rest of their lives. Only as many rabbits can be saved as there is money to spay, neuter, and transport them, so the funds raised at this bake sale will all go directly to saving more bunnies' lives. UVic has plans to kill any rabbits who are not rescued. Please bring your wallet and sweet tooth to this life-saving event. Also, if you stay for Chinese vegetarian food at 3G Restaurant, they will be donating 20% of their sales from the evening to go to saving the bunnies. If you would like to donate vegan baked goods to this event, please contact Joanne at joanne@liberationbc.org. And is it correct that there are two people who are matching donations up to $1,000?
That's right. So we have two matching donors up to $1,000. That means every dollar you give at this bake sale, it will be $3 for the bunnies.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
And also on Wednesday night, July 28th at 10 p.m., Global Television will be airing a documentary called Revealed, No Country for Animals. No Country for Animals examines Canada's deplorable record on animal welfare and looks at the people who are fighting to bring about much-needed change. This documentary exposes Quebec's notorious puppy mills and examines the mistreatment of animals raised for food. You'll see the gestation crates where animals spend their entire lives confined in standing positions and overcrowded abattoir-bound trucks where livestock can go for days without food or water. This program introduces viewers to some of the people who are fighting to bring about change in this country. There's Nicole Jonkis challenging the Quebec courts to close the horrific puppy mills, and Twyla Francois, armed with an undercover camera, campaigning vigorously to bring attention to the mistreatment of farm animals. You'll see Canada's first lawyer to specialize in animal law and a new young generation dedicated to the fight to improve the lives of animals through legal and educational means. No Country for Animals is a documentary that will enlighten and enrage you, and will also leave you wondering how humane our society really is. There's also an ongoing event every Monday night. It's a fundraising event for CATCA, which is Campaigns Against the Cruelty to Animals. It's called Bowl for the Animals. It's at Excalibur Bowling Center, located at 12350 Patello Place in Surrey, near the Scott Road SkyTrain station. Have fun bowling and eating veggie and vegan food while helping the animals in need. Bowling for the Animals is here and is happening every Monday. Just get a group of 3 to 6 or even more friends together for a bowling evening or afternoon of fun. CATCA fundraiser package is $20 per person and includes 2 games of bowling, bowling shoes, but note for vegans, just bring some non-slippery shoes, a vegan veggie burger with salad or French fries, or you can have a vegan wrap with salad or French fries and a glass of pop, iced tea, or beer. This price includes taxes and gratuities. Just go on a Monday night to Excalibur Bowling Center. At the reception desk, you need to say that you were there for the CATCA fundraising to get this promotional price. Just make sure you're there by 9 p.m., although the bowling alley is open until midnight. If you have any animal or vegetarian-related events coming up that you would like to have us announce on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thank you so much for that, Carissa. You're listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. So last Monday, Allison and I attended the park board meeting where the commissioners were to vote on whether or not to allow questions to be asked, a question to be asked on the ballot in the next election. The question would be something like, do you think whales and dolphins should be kept in captivity? The motion was introduced by Green Party Park Board Commissioner Stuart McKinnon and seconded by COPE Commissioner Loretta Woodcock. Monday night, the 5 remaining Park Board commissioners voted down the motion, saying that Vancouverites do not have a right to their opinion on this issue. Outrageous. And if you're not familiar with this issue, you may say, what does the park board have to do with the whales and dolphins? Well, the Vancouver Aquarium, which is the only institution in Vancouver that keeps whales and dolphins in captivity, sits on the land that is leased out by the park board. So obviously what happens on city property is under the jurisdiction of the city and should be subject for public discourse. So, Allison, you and I were both there. Mm-hmm. Would you say that there was a lack of interest from Vancouverites on the captive sedation issue?
Not at all. I would say it was a very hot topic of the evening. There were about 23 delegates there, and the vast majority, except for 4 people from the Vancouver Aquarium and 1 individual, were all there to speak for the animals. And there were other people there like me as well who were just there to listen and to support what these presenters were speaking on. So one after another, there was definitely a lot of support there for the animals and people that came out. And I haven't been to one of these meetings before, but I would guess that usually, you know, based on the motion that was spoken about before that, there were only 7 speakers for that versus 23. Wow.
Right. And it's like 5 minutes per speaker. So that's like over 2 hours of people speaking.
Yeah. The 2 hours went by quickly. I found it really interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Yeah. Because, you know, the aquarium people didn't make any sense. But.
And they were all at the end too, so they could have their last say, right?
Yeah.
So.
And what was the highlight for you?
Well, I'd have to say it was Miss Joanne Chang's presentation.
And,
I know you said I couldn't say that.
You're not biased at all in any way.
I wasn't being biased. Miss Joanne Chang, the biggest animal rights person I know, decided to actually speak on a totally different angle, which was the fact that you weren't pleased that you had voted for these people who are now not letting the public speak. So I found that was a really interesting angle for you to cover. Everyone else spoke about the captivity of animals and why it's wrong, right? But it's a political issue as well. And, I mean, you definitely had the most applause from all the speakers. So I can't say that I was personally biased. I would have thought that anyways. And I also enjoyed the comment that Ray Vasudevan made. She's an animal rights activist as well in the city. And she said, here's a story I want to tell. I was speaking to a woman one day, and the woman said, oh, I miss seeing the whales at the aquarium. And I replied, well, they don't miss seeing you. I mean, that just summed it up so quaintly and very clearly. Anyone can get that.
Yeah. Well, right now we actually have our next guest in the studio. And, of course, this topic we're talking about is very relevant. Our next guest, animal activist Robert Light, who we connected with at Monday's Park Board meeting, he was one of the speakers as well. And he has been to numerous Park Board meetings over the years in which the aquarium issues, the aquarium issue was hotly contested. So I'm sure Robert can give us a clearer picture of what transpired Monday night. So welcome to Animal Voices, Robert.
Oh, thank you very much.
Welcome, Robert.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Monday night, the Park Board commissioners voted 5-2 in favor of silencing the people of Vancouver over the issue of captive cetaceans. Were you surprised by the result?
I was never surprised because I've been speaking to park commissioners since 1987.
Wow.
Annalise Sorg was there representing the wonderful organization of Whales in Captivity. And you know, do the math. 1987, 90, 93, 96, 99, 02, 05, 08.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, we're used to it. And we know that it's usually going to be people like Vision and, of course, the NPA, which is Nonpartisan Association, which should really be renamed the No Plebiscite Association. And the Vision people, they all lined up with their corporate masters and and did the right thing from their point of view. The plebiscite would have been non-binding. Stuart McKinnon did a wonderful job in presenting it, bless him. And it is a non-binding referendum. Are you in favor of phasing out cetacean exhibits in Stanley Park? And they do lease the land there. And, you know, the fudging that they did, the Vision and the NPA people, they kept repeating, well, there's a lease and we don't want to be sued by the aquarium. Mm-hmm. I'm going like, well, why would you lease land to a tenant that's going to sue you if you want to change your mind in the future? The referendum, the plebiscite, would have had no effect on the existing lease, and Stuart McKinnon said, well, if they could point to the place in the lease where it says that you will be sued by the aquarium, then I'm willing to back off. And of course, they didn't find it because it's not there.
That's a really interesting point you bring up, Robert, because that is their tenant. They're acting, though, like the aquarium owns them and that they have to be, you know, following their rules. That's the impression I got.
Well, I wish I could do that to my landlord. you know, and the thing is that every landlady or landlord is allowed to change their mind in the future. The referendum would not affect this lease. The very simple fact is that it would affect a future lease, if necessary, which has not yet been signed or even drawn up. Well, it has nothing to do with it, nothing at all. They're against the plebiscite for the very simple reason they know they will lose. That is the only reason, going all the way back to 1987, why they're against a plebiscite. Because even though we're on a shoestring budget, I drive a car that's 16 years old, you know, it doesn't matter. They're so afraid of us, even with all their corporate sponsors and all their money, they know that we can reach the 500,000 voters of Vancouver. And that's why they had to close the ranks. And that's why the media was there, because they saw something unjust going on.
Well, the question of holding a referendum issue of keeping whales and dolphins in captivity is one that keeps coming up. And I was there in 2006. Can you talk about what happened in 2006 when the proposal was put on the table?
Well, again, it was a shutdown. Again, what really disturbed me, of course, Joanne, was how members of COPE had their opportunity pre-2006 to, you know, they had a majority. They changed their minds once they were in office. Gosh, I don't know why that happens with politicians. And then in 2006, you know, we couldn't get past them. They had, you know, like Loretta Woodcock said things like, oh, no, the aquarium is great. They're doing all this wonderful work. So
wow.
that's what we've seen so many times. And I think that it's not enough for us to keep going cap in hand and ask them to do the right thing. We're going to have to do the right thing. I think we need to look at changes. We have an election coming up in 2011, in November 2011. I think that we should, this fall, have some kind of an organizing meeting of the good groups that have been working on this and to say, look, we've tried this many, many times. Mm-hmm. 36 commissioners have gone through that board now. Mm-hmm. We have to look at this. We can't keep doing the same thing. I think we're going to have to raise tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, to get the candidates we want for the 2011 election for Parks Board. And then there would be, if we got a majority in 2011, we only need four. We already have one with Stuart McKinnon. 2014, you would have an election and a plebiscite, which would ask for the phase-out. And then in 2015, the lease expires. And I think we'd had be in a political position to say to the aquarium, look, you either release these cetaceans, and this is what we want you to do, or you're leaving town. Because we've done it before. We've done it to rodeos. Mm-hmm. We've done it to zoos. Mm-hmm. Okay? We have the power to do this. So this is sort of why I'm here today, is to talk about the election in 2011, have an election and a plebiscite in 2014, and then the lease expires in 2015. So that we would be in a political position to have a newer relationship where the tenant doesn't tell the landowner what to do.
Now, speaking of politicians, COPE commissioners, and Loretta Woodcock, I think wasn't this tried before, where the whale people got the COPE people elected, and they had a majority board, and Loretta Woodcock and the rest of them went against the whales, and now she's a minority, and she knows the plebiscite or any the votes won't go through. So then she's again friends with the whales. How can we be sure that if we spend tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands to get an official elected, that they're not just going to turn their back on us again?
The friends of the people who are friends of the whales were working with Loretta and other members of COPE tightly as we are right now in this room. Like, we were tight, okay? And then came the turn, and then they blocked us from getting a plebiscite. What do we have to do? Well, we have to go to the political parties. I don't wish to be partisan, but right now the Greens are the only ones who have stood up and done the right thing. If it's getting more Greens on that Parks Board, or even running our own candidates on the single issue, and say to them, look, we want these whales out. I want you to vote for me. I need 55,000 votes or better. Let's go. Let's rock. If we have to, that's what we'll do. If I have to, I will do it. I have friends who will do it. And the group that I'm with, Free the Whales Vancouver, we have a member who's a multimillionaire. And he's starting to make noises about putting big money in and having, a campaign. So even if we just got $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000, we'd be doing very well. So I want to have an organizing meeting in the fall, September or October, and we will come through. I'd love to come back to your radio station and talk about the future and what we can do, because we've got 2011 coming, mm-hmm. and we can make that election in 2011 our own plebiscite, mm-hmm. saying, give us a majority with people we can trust, and we're going to go in there, and we're going to get this thing done.
Right.
And I think that's what we now have to look. If we haven't learned that from Monday, then we haven't learned anything, and we've only compounded the tragedy.
And, okay, so just a little bit about, the Park Board and the relationship between the Park Board and the aquarium. Why does the aquarium have so much power over the Park Board commissioners?
Money. They pull in $24 million a year. They have friends like BCTV, the Vancouver Sun, all these huge corporations that have tremendous political influence. That's why they're wagging the dog. Mm-hmm. And that's why they can do it. They plan to bring in more dolphins. And, this is their kind of mentality. This is why we have to say, if plutocracy is all you're going to give us, if rule by money is all you're going to give us, then we're going to go out there and get that. And we're going to campaign. And we're going to have posters up. We're going to have billboards up. We're going to have radio ads. If that's really what it takes in this country to do it, then we'll go and do it. I founded the Greenpeace office in Montreal. I didn't speak any French. I made them hundreds of thousands of dollars when I ran their fundraising campaigns in Eastern Canada. If that's what it takes, if you really want to do that, then we think we have the people out there, the people who will vote for that plebiscite, they will donate, and they will help the candidates to get in.
Do you think people that are, I guess, professional politicians, they're afraid to vote against the aquarium because essentially then their career would be over?
Oh, indeed. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They would, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, it would be political suicide for someone to do that. What you see with Loretta, she will vote for it when she knows it's going to be defeated, mm-hmm. and she will vote against it when she knows that it will win or fears that it will win. That's the kind of weathercock politicians we don't want in there. We want to find those people who will do that. Then also, don't forget, once the plebiscite, once we get it at Parks Board, we also then have to go to City Hall, and they have to agree to it as well.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's the next step. They have to agree to it as well, and that's another step. But I think that by finding a majority on the Parks Board, they will go with it. It's very rare that they've ever turned down, say, you know, the school trustees or we need more capital works, more bridges, and more sidewalks and sewers. They very rarely block it. Usually they'll just rubber stamp it. But we do have to go to City Hall next. Mm-hmm. This is we have to meet power with power.
Right.
And I think that the aquarium has gone on long enough. I mean, 27 whales and dolphins have died there. Mm-hmm. 27. And those, it's not just an animal rights issue, if I can diverge for a second. It's mm-hmm. also it's an ecological issue. Those whales and those dolphins should be out in their ecosystems having babies, mm-hmm. keeping their ecosystems strong. So I think we can not just appeal to the animal rights community, but the overlap of the ecological community. Mm-hmm. I think we need a presence at the aquarium day after day. When they're open, our tables are out there and we are leafleting. Politely, kindly, as we are, but we keep the pressure on. That's what I think the future tells us. That's what I finally saw on Monday night when mm-hmm. that vote went down. And I said, I think you may recall, I said to the commissioners, tonight we're going to win either way. Because if we get the plebiscite, we're on. If we don't get the plebiscite, you just gave us more members. You just gave us more support. So let's take that mm-hmm. And move into the future. We'll have an organizing meeting in the fall. I'll come back to your show, your wonderful show right. that I listen to every Friday.
Oh, thank you.
And we'll get in there and we'll do this thing.
Great. Now, I find that people tend to polarize the issue and argue that a plebiscite wouldn't be a reasonable solution because, you know, we can't just dump the whales who have been, you know, in captivity for years back in the ocean. Is that even part of the proposal if that went through?
No, the plebiscite is to phase out. And
yeah.
we can say to the aquarium when we get a majority and we have the power of the plebiscite behind us, well, we can say, you're not sending those things to SeaWorld. You're not sending them to Marineland. Mm. No. They're going back to the Arctic, and you're going to pay, or somebody's going to pay, for their rehabilitation. I talked to the good gentleman, Mr. Barry, who you know does rehabilitation of dolphins. Mm. If we can rehabilitate criminals like Conrad Black, certainly we can rehabilitate belugas to eat fish again, or dolphins to eat fish again. I mean, we can do this. In fact, they do most of it themselves. If you just release nature, nature will do this. So we have to say to, I'm hoping very much that when 2014 gets through, we have another majority on Parks Board, and we have the power of the plebiscite behind us, we can sit down and say to the aquarium, you know, you're going to release them, and we don't want you to send them to another prison. We don't want you to send them to another prison where they will die.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to do is to get the rehabilitation done. And if there are certain dolphins or belugas that cannot be rehabilitated, let's do a keiko like we did in Iceland, where they have a cove that's netted off, and Keiko would go for little walks every day behind a boat
mm-hmm.
and have that freedom and have that choice to be free again.
Right.
I think that's the power that's nascent in our community. Now, when the aquarium did their opinion poll, they sampled 600 people. And the lady who did the poll, I don't remember her name now, she was sitting beside John mm-hmm. Nightingale, she said that we polled 600 people. And I remember the groan in the building because 600 people? There's 500,000 voters in mm-hmm. Vancouver. And they're very apathetic. You can get voted onto Parks Board with 55,000 votes out of 500,000.
Mm-hmm.
But a plebiscite And an election that is a plebiscite will bring out a lot more people. I got a lot of tempeh-chewing friends who will come out for that. They'll skip the whole rest of it. Capital Works don't care. But you give me a plebiscite, you give me people who will release whales and tell the aquarium to start working ecologically, they will come.
See, that's what they were worried about, though. There was one argument that said, oh, but if we have this plebiscite, then all these animal activists are going to vote. But the fact is that it's part of the civic elections. So everyone has a choice as to whether they want to vote or not. And if it happens to be people who only care about the issue, then so be it. Everyone has the ability to vote, though. And that's what should matter. Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's a race for the aquarium to breed captive whales because of the pressure put on by the people?
We'd have to ask them that question, wouldn't we? I think that there is a business. You have to also realize that there are businesses at the aquarium, like the salt water that they use at Safeway or in restaurants to keep fish alive. That's through an aquarium corporation. So they have these corporate interests within themselves, and they are the ones who have to answer that question. Do they want to breed and do that? Of course they do. Mm. Of course they do. They're acting like capitalists. By the way, the word capitalist comes from the ancient Romans, capita, head of cattle. That's where it comes from.
Interesting.
Yeah, capita. And so they are classic capitalists. They want to breed whales and dolphins and sell them to others because it's very good business. Next to war, slavery is the most profitable business you can be in, bigger than drugs.
Hmm.
This is why we have to say, why the people of this wonderful city have to say, we want to be a green city.
Right.
This is where Greenpeace was born, the anti-nuclear movement, the feminism. We can say that, and we've been very nice about it. We've been very Canadian. Oh, please give us a plebiscite. And they haven't done it. Well, guess what? We're going to do it.
Right.
We're going to go ahead and do it.
You know, the aquarium, they can, you know, if they're not such capitalists, they can actually, with all the money they have, do some really good work rehabilitating the whales, even establishing a sanctuary where these animals can live out the rest of their lives if they can't be released, but not making them do tricks or keep them in solitary confinement. And, you know, I think they would still be able to sell tickets if they have, like, a sanctuary where people can go and watch the animals behave like they normally would in the ocean.
Indeed. I spoke to Parks Board 2 years ago, and Dr. Nightingale was there. They talk about how their big thing is the education. They're always going to talk about that, Joanne.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that you're teaching people about education of whales would be like, oh, I'm concerned about the people in Darfur. I'm going to fly over to Darfur, find a handful of people from different families, kidnap them, drug them, bring them back, put them on display, teach them stupid human tricks to support the people in Darfur. That is point for point their logic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's speciesism. Just as there's sexism, racism, elitism, this is classic speciesism. They own those whales, and they say that. So what we have is a different consciousness. The aquarium represents, to my mind, a 1950s, and further back, ideal of environmentalism. We are representing an ecological, if you will, a Gaian ideal that sees equivalence to all other suffering in the world. The essence of empathy is to feel pain when somebody else feels pain, or to feel joy when someone else feels joy. The essence of sadism is the opposite, to feel joy at another being suffering. We know the whales are suffering. We know they're not living to their life expectancies. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking as I did on Monday, I've been to prison. I got arrested with 1,800 close personal friends at Clackwood in 93. And I had a Club Med incarceration over at Nanaimo Correctional Center. And I still had nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
If I, an educated human being, am going through nightmares, what are the whales going through year after year after year?
Absolutely.
But this is the hope. This is the hope that we have, that we can do this thing. Elections are coming in 2011, and let's get that majority, mm-hmm. and then we can stand up to the aquarium. In fact, we'll call the aquarium. We want you to come to these meetings. This is one of the few times that Dr. John Nightingale has actually been showing up.
Well, we hope to vote for Robert Light for Park Board Commissioner in 20, 2012?
Oh, 2011.
2011.
Well, I know I've got the whale vote. By the way, I asked the lady who did the survey, she did 600 good Vancouver citizens. I asked her, did you ever think of asking the whales that they may have an opinion? She got red-faced and turned away.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Robert.
Oh, thank you. There is still hope, and if anything comes out of Monday, it is hope that we own the future.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Remember to sign up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please do check out our website, www.animalvoices.org, where our shows can be also downloaded from. And next week on the show, please join us again as we'll be interviewing Jonathan Balcombe, who is the author of a book, Second Nature, The Inner Lives of Animals. Remember, tomorrow is Animal Freedom Day. Sign up at www.animalfreedomday.com to pledge to go vegan for one day. And you can also check out that website to see live streaming of tomorrow's global events. Please tune in again next week, and thank you for listening.
See you next week.
Bacon that we hold in our hand. Instead, we get.